new industries or cells. In our case, I co-founded the company Diagnostic Photonics to disseminate this technology both nationally and internationally. Diagnostic Photonics, with offices in both Champaign and Chicago, has developed commercial prototypes, has recently completed larger clinical trials at Carl, at Johns Hopkins University and their clinical networks, and has achieved the necessary regulatory and reimbursement milestones to really take off. Diagnostic Photonics was initially funded by Illinois Ventures and individual investors, but the momentum that we've since generated has now opened the door for major investors and medical device companies, and is really now ready to transform the practice at which we do breast cancer surgery and eliminate those reoperations and potentially even the local recurrence. My second example is really at the other end of this healthcare spectrum, primary care medicine. Primary care, which I include family practice and pediatrics, is really the front line of our healthcare system, as we've heard. But primary care physicians are still using very rudimentary tools and technologies like reflex hammers or stethoscopes that were designed in the 1800s. We're changing this. And with NIH and industry support, we've integrated OCT into optical instruments that are giving primary care physicians the screening and diagnostic technology that's never been available to them before. It's the same type of technology that previously was directed towards specialists. And so we're using this technology to now diagnose ear infections and even eye disease related to diabetes. Every parent knows the impact that ear infections have not only on their child, but also their lost work and the lengthy treatments that are involved. And what we're beginning to discover with this technology is that we've been treating this very common disease perhaps inadequately all along, and simply because we didn't have the information or that technology to really make those best medical decisions. With medical engineering, we can give the primary care doctor, that nurse practitioner, or even the staff at your local Walgreens the same quantitative diagnostic power as an experienced physician, and that's disruptive. Last year, I co-founded Photonicare that will be licensing intellectual property from the University of Illinois to develop this technology for primary care. We have an office in the Research Park at Urbana and launching a seed round of funding this spring. What we've done is we've really established a pipeline through which not only flows technology from that bench to the patient to the population, but also a pipeline for our people. Postdocs and grad students that are in my group or that I interact with daily now look to these companies as exciting new career opportunities and paths, and our intellectual capital grows here. Since nearly 100% of children are going to have ear infections, and since we are facing this epidemic of obesity and diabetes, our technology and our researchers are really poised to transform primary care and this technology, perhaps even our healthcare system. So these are the kinds of things I'm talking about when I say we can re-engineer medicine. We do that by educating, training, empowering the next generation of tech-savvy physicians with technologies and tools that take advantage of the new developments in genomics, bioinformatics, personalized healthcare monitoring, and this distributed healthcare system as we seek to re-engineer all of these. I started by telling you why I came to Illinois, and I'll end by telling you why I stay here. And it's because I can think of no other institution that's capable of changing the world in this way. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Bobot. The last speaker is Professor Rob Wynn from the College of Medicine at UIC.
Thank you. I guess it doesn't always help to have the W is my last name, but so don't let the wind fool you. So I am actually going to do this, and I'm going to challenge myself to, because I can, as a pulmonologist, I can hear you're breathing a little faster because you're wanting to get to lunch. So I'm going to do this in 4 minutes. And so I'm going to give you a big picture thing about, while we talk about what's changing in medicine, I'm going to tell you that the change is here. And what I was struck by was Dr. Pendergrass, when we talked about how do we get this care out closer to our communities, it turns out that we at the University of Illinois have had this model for the last 20 some odd years, and I'm going to tell you ways that we can actually extend that model to do great things. When I actually think about medicine, again, I'm a MD, run a basic science lab, all the rest of these things, specialist, but I stopped thinking about myself as a specialist probably 5-7 years ago. In fact, I still think that we're hanging on to some old 20th century language that has to give way to a transition when we talk about primary care versus tertiary care versus quaternary care. To be honest with you, growing up as a kid from a teenage mom in one of these projects, similar to your Englewood and all the rest of this, all I care about is care. And I think the people in our communities care about not that you're a primary care or specialist, but what team, how are they going to get their care? So I'd like to actually move this conversation more towards our opportunity that we have to really take the lead, actually in the country, through our Mile Square networks of federally qualified health centers, in trying to actually get us and challenging both the community, to be honest with you, as well as the university, to figure that we have an opportunity to really change the way medical models are and healthcare delivery systems are, so that it not only becomes a place where maybe you get your risk looked at, but you also have nutritional studies there, you also have research there, you also have specialties from engineering and everything else in our communities as close as we can get them. Now, the interesting thing about when you think about federally qualified health centers, this was part of that movement 50 years ago with the war on poverty. But the interesting thing in that 50 years, cars have changed. Interesting enough, even the light bulb has changed. And in 50 years, the toothbrush has actually even changed. I actually can tell you, because I have an Oral-B and I looked at what it would look like 50 years ago from the School of Dentistry. The interesting thing, though, is when we think about our federally qualified health centers and what happened in 1967, and that we were supposed to provide care to those who couldn't, I ask, why hasn't that model changed? And in fact, in 2014, we are still thinking, again, about a 20th century model that was roughly about 50 years ago. Now, it is true that every academic center has a tripartite mission, and I'm a firm believer in that tripartite mission, particularly as a clinician, of delivering good health care, education, and research. But as a person who lived in a neighborhood like Englewood, there's also a tripartite mission that we're missing. And their tripartite mission in the community is education, health, and jobs. Now, when I actually look at an academic center, and I'm reminded about something my grandfather told me before I went to Notre Dame. He sort of said, well, when you go to Notre Dame, I hope you can come out and still get a real job. And so it took me a while to figure out what he was talking about, but there is this sense that we talk a lot about academic excellence, but one of the questions I have on the table is, how do we actually take our academic excellence and move it towards a model of academic relevance to have the impact on the communities that we're trying to get? One such example comes about in the context of Miles Square, where you have what I think the potential of showing the rest of the country an interesting partnership, and probably one of the best partnerships, of having the voice of the community and the resources and wisdom of a university coming together to really have true impact on healthcare. And not just do they feel better, but things of how can we actually affect issues around their job situation and wealth and poverty and obesity and all the reasons. How do we do that? We have a living model of which we can do that in. And I'm a firm believer that I like to think big, and part of that was living in Colorado, but you know, while I hear about things of the New Deal, I keep telling people that what we actually have and have had for the 20 years, but certainly as of today, is a big deal in a post-affordable healthcare sort of society, where the promise of having more insurance has to be met with the responsibility of an institution of giving that access to care. And more than Michigan, and more than Wisconsin, and more than Minnesota, we are poised at this moment, at this time, with the University of Illinois and Miles Square Health Center Networks to do exactly that, to deliver a kind of care that's not just focused only on medicine, but that is really holistic, that we're treating whole communities and whole and people as whole people. Anyways, I know my time is coming up. I am going to stop and essentially tell you that I could not be happier and prouder of being at a place who at this time in history literally will be able to sort of set the tone of how the new 21st century models of delivery of healthcare will get established. And I just want to thank you all for allowing me to sort of be here. I know I had another talk. It's on a piece of paper. Forget about it. But, you know, this is kind of what is up. If you're finally feeling my excitement, it is absolutely real and it's palpable, because I will tell you there are great things that we can get done, not just in Chicago as we think about this, but in places like Rockford, who also has similar issues. And as I recognize, as our communities like Cabrini-Green went away, these people went other places. So when I see U of I, I see us as a whole system trying to deal with this issue. So I know, hopefully you'll read more about Miles Square. You're going to be hearing more about Miles Square. And you're going to be hearing more about what we're trying to do as far as really taking our academics into our communities to make an impact, hopefully over time. And with that, I'm going to stop. Thank you very much.
Well, if I can, Trustee Strobel, Chairman Kennedy, President Easter, I think you can see why we picked this panel. I know we're late in the hour, but I think it's every one of the presentations have been exemplars of what we wanted to do. What we heard earlier is there's complex problems out there. What we also heard is we have, as President Easter said, an opportunity to build on our successes. And one of the reasons why Christoph and I picked this panel is because I think it's very evident that we have significant successes in which to build on. I think one thing that was very common amongst these is that although they're pioneers of transformation, and that's again, but they clearly could articulate their passion for solving problems, and I think we should all be very proud of them representing the University of Illinois. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Larry and Christoph, for selecting this panel. I wouldn't take away one word or 1 minute of what we heard today. You are truly awesome and provide the inspiration that we need to go into the next part of the retreat. Looking at the clock, I think what we're going to do is we're not going to take the official breaks that are there on the agenda that you have. I'd ask everybody, you're color-coded on your name tags, to go to your breakout sessions. Just grab lunch as quickly as you can and go to your breakout rooms. Build your own breaks in over the next hour and a half or so. We're going to reconvene here instead of 2:30. We'll come back here at 2:45. So the breakout sessions are going to be a little shorter than what we had originally planned, but I think we all have a common ground from which to discuss, and so we'll just do a Jeopardy kind of, you know, fast breakout session, and the facilitators and the scribes will be ready to be back here at 2:45 and report out. How do you find the answer?